Welcome back to Hour 2 of the Hollywood Casino Press Box, featuring Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoin on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
To spend my life with you, and they say the same, baby, since we've been together.
And welcome back, Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan, Frank Cusimano with Martin Kilcoin. Reed Lowe spent 4 years with the Blues. The penalty minutes were 159, 160, 234, and 141. He joins us now. Reed, great to be with you. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, guys. Good to hear you.
All right. When you turned off that television last night, your first thought after the game was what?
Just a great win. You know, excited that they managed to continue playing the way they were, and obviously excited to see how Binnington was going to play, and man, he sure didn't disappoint.
Yeah, going into it, do you think his teammates even wondered, well, it's different, it's the playoffs, how will he handle it in this building? He's never played up here before. Do you think there was any in the room thought about, well, I wonder how he's going to do?
No, I don't think so. I think that they've seen what he's like and what he's about, and I think that they were just ready to get out there. And you know, obviously, when he makes the saves that he does, it just builds confidence within the guys. You know, the one goal that he did let in, you know, there isn't a goalie on the planet that's going to stop that.
After Jordan Binnington, who was the best non-goalie on the ice for the Blues last night?
You know, I would say that it was probably the Maroon Thomas and John Blank line, Bozak line. Man, they were all over the place from the beginning of the game, all the way through the game. You know, one thing that I'm really impressed with is just how Patty's dealt with everything that's happened this year. Obviously, surgery on his back and his knee in the summertime probably came back too early because he's the hometown kid and everybody's excited, and he struggles in the first part of the season. Healthy scratch a few games, kind of starts to get himself back to where he's feeling good. His body's feeling good. He's getting into that hockey shape, and now you're seeing the kind of power that this guy can play with. And that second goal, that game-winning goal, you know, from the time he made the move, the second effort to continue to have the puck, take it in the corner, basically beat three guys, and then make an absolutely ridiculous no-look pass to Bozak, who puts it under the bar. Like, that line was all over the place all night. They had tons of chances. They were the key to that win last night.
And this time of year is when he could really stand out, right? A big guy who can be physical. We know that's the game that the Jets are going to bring. I would think in this series, a guy like Maroon could be huge.
He can be very huge. And, you know, they showed it at a little clip of it last night where he was just giving the bench some lips before the third period, just letting them know that the big rig's coming to town. And he delivered on top of it as well. So now they know that he can talk and he can walk.
Who concerns you the most on the other side, on the Winnipeg Jets side? Would it be Laine?
Yeah, Laine's a great player. They've got a great team. For whatever reason, they've struggled since the All-Star break. They've lost more games than they've won. And I just think that right now they're just kind of trying to find themselves. But it's playoff hockey. All meters are back at zero. Everybody's in first place. And I think that this is a team that you don't want to give any energy, any life to. You got to play physical on them. Dustin Byfuglien's a guy that can turn it up at any time. He can skate, he can hit, he can be physical. He's a game changer, so he's a guy that they really have to let him sleep. I played with Buff. He was a rookie my last year pro down in Norfolk, Virginia. And I tell you what, the kid can just shoot the puck. He can do everything. So he's a guy that they got to be careful with. And they just got to keep getting traffic in front of the goalie. And that's fairly cliche, but it's extremely truthful with these goaltenders. And last night there was a ton of traffic on the Blues' first goal, and Perron managed to sneak one through the blocker side under the arm. So that was guys in front of the net and making it happen. And I think that the Blues are the type of team for me, with the way that they're set up and how they've developed over the last portion of the season. They have to focus on their game and worry less about the other team and what they can do. I think if they focus on what they can do, they have such a dynamic team that they're really in control of their own destiny.
Reed, do you think this is the best depth they've had in a long time? And I know that's always kind of been their focus. When they would face the Blackhawks, they'd say, well, the Taves and Kane, we can't compete, but we're going to be a little deeper. We've got more talent at the bottom of our lines. But I feel like this year, the most in more so than any recent years, where your third line, your fourth line could do some scoring. Where, I mean, that's in the playoffs, that's usually what sets a team apart. But can you recall a team that's had this kind of depth in recent years?
You know, one thing that kind of just catches me off your comment is, last time I seen a 600-point score on a fourth line, it was the Detroit Red Wings when Luke Robitaille was on the fourth line, and they won a Stanley Cup. So, yeah, without question, this is probably a team that has had the most depth. But I think that what makes a championship team is something has to happen during that season. And I think the Blues have a little bit of story to go on. They've been in the depths of, you know, hell, for lack of a better term, and just miserable, and even fighting each other in practice. And you can only imagine what's going on inside those four walls of the dressing room. To turning around and getting a guy that can come in and have a little bit of a story with a goaltender who Bennington's done, and, you know, Craig Berube and his leadership and his demanding them play the game the right way. You know, I watched Tarasenko at the beginning of the season, and I was like, who is this guy? Like, when he got the puck, I was scared of what he was going to do with it. And it wasn't a good thing, where 2 years ago I was like, oh my goodness, he's got it. You know, now he's playing at that level, and he's bought into the commitment level that it takes to be a championship team. You look at that play, made a great play, getting a stick in the puck lane, got it off the boards, and like completely beat that defenseman and got a breakaway and almost scored a goal. That's the kind of commitment that it takes to be a champion. And I think Craig Berube's really brought that, as well as his assistant coach with Ott Van Ryan. So these guys are extremely dangerous right now.
I got to ask you, mentioned Berube real quickly. You were in the league at the same time. Did you guys ever have a tussle?
Yeah, I fought Craig in the first period of my 57th penalty minute game in Calgary.
And how'd that go?
You know, he was kind of in the twilight years of his career, and I kind of was more hungry than he was. And, you know, we punched each other a couple times in the face, and then we went to the ground and patted each other in the back and said, thanks.
Have you talked about it with him? Does that come up?
No, we've never really had a conversation about it. It was quite shadowed by the other 53 penalty minutes I got in my second shift in the second period. So
what about him holding players accountable? I'm not saying like he's getting in superstars' faces and cussing at them, but it does seem to really feel like he will be a little bit more in your face than previous coaches, and he doesn't really care what players think.
You know, I think when I look at Craig and how he coaches a hockey team, and just the demeanor that he's kind of like that vice principal when I was a kid that used to carry the strap around in his back pocket. You know, he probably never used it, but you're always scared that he was going to, and he just commands a respect with everything that he does. And the way that he coaches the game and he holds himself, you never see him getting too excited on the bench, whether it's real good things that are going on or whether things aren't going great. He's just a guy that has been in the league for 20 years. And when you're on a team with a guy like that, it's just kind of a different level, right? Like, he's fought everybody, all the toughest guys in the league. He's played on second and third lines. He scored some goals. He's done everything that you can do. And I think when that guy's asking you to do something and telling you what it takes to win and be a part of something special, guys are going to listen. And, you know, when you got a guy like O'Reilly that day in and day out and game in and game out is the hardest working player probably in the NHL, that's a great leadership core to have. And the Blues are lucky to have a guy like him to be able to have all the other kids going. And they've had some young kids come in here and really caught on and done some good things. And so I think that, again, it wasn't a great, you know, we were all talking in November, like, you know, we're going to have to blow this entire team up, man. They were talking about trading for Petrangelo in February, you know what I mean? So I think that there's a story that goes along with this. And I think that when you catch a wave like that, it's something that could be pretty special.
The Blues former enforcer Reed Lowe with Martin and Frank on 590 The Fan, the pride of Moose Jaw, which I always thought sounded made up. If I was a hockey player, I'd say I was from Moose Jaw, but this guy's actually from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. When's the last time you were back in Moose Jaw?
I was back this January, watched my niece play hockey. She's a AAA goaltender back there and going to college next year, and I hadn't watched her play in the 3 years she was in the league at AAA, so I went back and hung out there for the weekend.
You go through Saskatoon, I guess?
You can fly into Regina or Saskatoon, but I flew into Saskatoon, so yeah. Drive down.
Travel,
2 hours.
Travel tips with Reed. Okay, I wanted to go back to something you mentioned. This team has been through a lot, and there was that famous fight at practice, and it looked terrible. I mean, the video of it where it's Bortuzzo basically beating up Sanford, and I thought, God, this is a team in disarray if they're beating each other up. How do you think that played out, and how some have said that was a rallying point or a turning point? How can that be something that brings a team together?
Well, I think it does. I think it got a little bit more press than any other fight, number one, because social media is what it is today, comparatively speaking to what it was 10 or 15 years ago, where that wasn't something that was very uncommon. But fighting in general is uncommon, so there might be some of that. But for me, I don't think that really is the key to what goes on. I think that you got to take a look, obviously, at a coaching change. But I think when I take a look at just something small that people maybe don't think about, the amount of time that Larry Robinson spent on the bench, and I don't know how many games it was exactly, but I know it was a few. And I know that this having a guy like that that's won as many Stanley Cups and Hall of Fame defenseman, maybe one of the top 10 defensemen ever to play in the game, just having him on the bench and having him be a part of that team and kind of get a little bit of an understanding of what's actually going on in the dressing room, what's going on the bench, what's going on with the players, and then being able to maybe give a little bit to the coaching staff and to the players and talk about what is and what isn't. Like, Larry Robinson's a guy that came in and coached the team halfway through a season and took them to the Stanley Cup championship with the New Jersey Devils. So I think something like that, that maybe doesn't get as noticed as much, for me, might be a bigger turning point for the St. Louis Blues that maybe nobody's even talking about.
Who do you fear the most in the West if you're a Blues fan?
You know, San Jose is playing good, but again, I'm interested in seeing how Calgary plays tonight. I'm gonna be tuning into that game. I want to watch them. I want to see if they're going to play with the same fire that they played all year with. Man, they've had a great year, and I was looking at the stats the other day, and I'm like, man, Calgary's pretty good, you know? And so I'm kind of surprised by them. So if I'm the St. Louis Blues, I think their team has always been, you know, Doug Armstrong's always tried to set that hockey team up with the thought process that we want to be able to have a hockey team that plays our game, knows what the other team's doing, but it's more important for the St. Louis Blues to play their hockey and play their consistency and play with their toughness and all the things that they need to do than it is for them to be too worried about the other teams. So there's a lot. The parity in the West is crazy. All the teams are good. Anybody can win. You saw it last night. So I think that their biggest fear that they should have is themselves.
And Reed, as an alum, I know you guys live and die with the team. And each year we sort of all collectively as a city think, well, maybe this is the year. Maybe this is the year. How did the alumni handle that emotion? And I'm sure the excitement, the mere thought of having a parade down Market Street. Every year you kind of amped up thinking maybe?
For sure. And, I remember thinking in July and August when all these moves were made and the Blues management did what they did, that, hey, this is I'm really excited about this team. And even when they weren't really doing much in December and November and then into the early parts of January, I was still like, man, I still think this team has something. Like, they've got a good mix. They just got to kind of shake it up a little bit and figure out what it is they aren't doing and get everybody on board. So I'm really excited about this year. You know, everybody's asked me. I think if there's a chance the Blues have had, this is the best one. I look forward to hopefully winning a Stanley Cup. And I've always said there's been a football parade and a baseball parade down Market Street, but if the Blues fans ever get down that street, it might never be the same.
Great stuff. Reed, honored to have you on the program. Hopefully we can talk throughout the postseason. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, guys, not a problem.
All right, Reed Lowe joining us. I've always been fascinated by that fighting concept that, you know, you go at it, then you shake hands and you just move on, and then you don't say anything about it, you know, 10 years later when you see him. You'd think, hey, remember when I beat you up?
I think, although Berube right now looks like he might be ready to throw down again.
Oh, yeah.
So unless you're ready to reenact things, you might want to just let it go.
I remember years ago they had two players mic'd up during a game, and they fought, and they pulled the audio from it, and it was just basically, you want to fight? Yeah. Okay. Then they dropped the gloves and started fighting. There wasn't any beef or argument or... It was one of the tassel.
We were in the tunnel at Joe Louis. It's in the middle of the playoffs in 98. And I hear these guys laughing and making all this noise. And I go around the corner, and Tony Twist and Joey Kosher are sitting there talking. These are the two guys who would fight each other. And they're like jacking around, talking about their summer plans and their family. And I'm like, wait a minute. These guys hate each other. They don't hate each other. They just fight for fun. I don't think we can ever wrap our head around it. I don't think it'll ever make sense to the rest of us.
And don't you think, too, by the way, you brought up Twist. Of all the guys who've ever fought, Twist at his prime, with his skill as a fighter, with his size as a massive man, was the scariest of them all.
1,000% yes, and also because he's crazy. And I love him. I would say
that was Martin.
That was. We're on remote today. We are not at the Kirkwood Studios in Woodlawn and Mansion. Anytime I've done a blues roast or blues event, I'll make fun of anybody and everybody. In fact, last year at the Darren Pang roast, I made a couple of Brett Hull jokes, and Chaser said the next day, Holy wants to know why you were picking on him. I'll make fun of anybody and everybody, except for Tony Twist. I've never made a joke about Tony Twist because I still fear the man. No, he was an incredible enforcer, and he was, you know, a bodybuilder, basically. Big, strong, yeah. Weightlifting.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's crazy. I would not cross. I mean that in the best way.
There's a Comedy Central roast with Gary Busey on once on a dais, and they kept saying that about him. It's like, we're not going to make fun of you because you scare us too much.
You're crazy.
You're too nuts.
Twister had a bar. It was, I think, the Imperial area. It was off 55. Yeah. This is years ago. This was not, oh, this was the, not Twister's saloon, but later he had like a pool billiards place. And we're there one night, a bunch of us, and some guy says something insulting to Twister's girlfriend. And I just thought, oh, my God, I'm going to leave before the police get here. This is not a – but he handled it really well. It was in a giant strip mall, like just 20 building, you know, storefronts across. He says to the guy, you're going to leave now. And I was just thinking, oh, my God, this is going to be terrible. And he didn't do anything violent. He said, you're going to leave. And the guy said, okay. He starts walking out the front door. He said, no, you're going out the back door. So he gets out the back door. I probably left 20 minutes there or so. The guy is just getting around because this building was so long. Think of like the longest strip mall with all these stores. So the guy had to walk all the way around to get to his car. 20 minutes later, he's still making the walk. And I thought that was Twister's way of punishing him without punching him in the face.
Wow. This almost sounded like Tony Soprano and Ralph.
It was very.
I watched last night.
This was very. We did have a Tony Twister, and it was very Sopranos. And he said, no, you go out the back door. You don't get to go out the front door. And the guy just kind of hung his head and went out the back.
We'll take a short time out. When we come back, we'll get into some text. We'll get to the bottom of the Impossible Burger at our favorite place, Lester's, right after this.